We're learning Tanya by the Alter Rebbe, and we are basically in chapter 6 of the first part. This is an interesting chapter, and not so difficult like in concept, but difficult to chew and to swallow. So let's go. Chapter 6, Perek Vav. Hine, now. We just finished from chapter 4 and 5, actually 3, 4, and 5, where we define basically what a soul is and that the soul has garments and powers and garments and so on. Chapter 6. Everything that we said until now, it's very nice. And it's talking about a very holy and mystical, interesting idea. But what happens when actually things don't go so nice? There's another side to the coin, so to speak. Chapter 6. Hine zeluma ze asa elekim. It's the verse God did one thing in front of the other, opposite to the other. Just as the divine soul is included, is formed, whatever, of 10 emanations, spheroids. Literally, sphera means like a brilliant thing, but whatever, it means an expression of God that we define in chapter 3. That are holy, kedoshos, umislabesh es bishloish alevushim kedoshim, and this soul is invested in 3 holy garments, like we define in chapter 4. So chapter 5 was like some kind of, even though it's not true what I'm saying, 100% true, because the Alter Rebbe did not write this, but it's like a parenthesis. We explain the garments of the soul, understanding godliness, that's the thought, talking about God and doing the commandments that are about talking, like saying the Shema, that's speech, and then doing what you have to do, not doing what you don't have to do, that's action of the mitzvahs, that's holy garments. Kach, in the same way, chapter 5 was like a parenthesis explaining that the specific garment of learning Torah, in knowing Torah, and in pronouncing the words and so on, it's a very holy thing, it's very holy unification with God. Okay, that's like a parenthesis. And now we go back. How about the garments? Kach nefesh sitra achra. The same thing happens with the soul of the other side. This expression, quote unquote, the other side, doesn't have to be misinterpreted, because the other side sounds that there are two sides. There's a side of holiness and a side of unholiness, or whatever that means. So how many gods do you have? I have a holy God and an unholy God. Chas v'shalom. God forbid to say such a thing. The other side, the Alter Rebbe is going to say it. The other side means anything that is against the will of God. And again, the Alter Rebbe is going to explain this very clearly. And what does that mean? Is there anything about besides God? Is there anything besides God? The answer is no. There's nothing besides God. But God conceals himself, giving room for things that oppose his own will to exist, in order for us to have free will, to choose between good and bad. If there wouldn't be a situation of bad, what does that mean, bad? A complete concealment of God, that means bad, so to speak, evil. If there wouldn't be such a thing, we wouldn't be able to choose between good and bad. And one of the most fundamental fundaments of Judaism is we can choose. There's free will. That's free will. So there is such a thing as, quote unquote, the other side, sitra achra. I'm not going to explain this expression anymore because it appears so many times. But so one explanation is enough. It doesn't mean that there's another God. And it doesn't mean that there's a fight, like the Christian world thinks. There's a fight between evil and good, and sometimes evil wins and sometimes good. So how many gods do you have? 2, at least. Evil and God. No. There's no such a thing. God, and Alter Rebbe is going to say this, God gives sustenance to the evil side, the other side, to exist, and it depends on God to exist, and it's a complete, perfect servant to God to exist, as the Alter Rebbe is going to say it, in order for us to have free will. So let's go move on. Kach nefesh sitra achra. Same thing happens with the soul of the other side, miklipas noiga, that comes from this. The Alter Rebbe is going to define this expression, as I'll translate in a second, between this chapter and next chapter, klipas noiga, a brilliant shell. What does that mean, a brilliant shell? So let's move back a little bit, just understand the structure. The Alter Rebbe spoke about chapter one. We'll go back to chapter one. Questions. Many, many questions. What's a Beinoni? Basically, that's the question, but many, many ideas behind it. What's a Beinoni? What's an intermediate person? And then he said, I'll teach you from the works of Chaim Vital, Kabbalah, that there are two souls. Oh, really? Yeah, two souls. One soul comes from, and the Alter Rebbe said, Klipas Noiga, from this level that he's defining right now. And then he said, there in chapter one, that all the natural inclinations the person has come from that soul. Okay. Then he moved on, chapter two, to the holy soul, divine soul. And then he explained the structure of the divine soul. There's an intellect, chapter three, there's an intellect, there are emotions, chapter four, garments, chapter five, oh, knowing Torah, amazing unification with God. And now it comes chapter six, oh yeah, everything that I just said to you about the divine soul, it also applies to the other one, the one that I defined in chapter one. Don't forget about it. It works exactly the same. Adam, this soul is invested. I didn't explain Klipas Noiga, what is a brilliant shell, on purpose, because chapter 7 is a whole long explanation on what this means. So let's wait for chapter 7. Now, there's something called brilliant, whatever that means, which is actually intermediate level, as we will learn in chapter 7. So this soul is Melubeshes Bedama Adam. This soul is invested in the blood of a person. And it also has 10 levels, just as the holy soul, so to speak, has 10 levels. The not-so-holy soul also has 10 levels, but these are levels of mesavusa. This is an Aramaic word that appears in the Zohar so many times. Unholiness means tuma, impurity. Then kisrim, keser, means a crown of impurity, which is actually 10 levels. So we see, interesting, the Alter Rebbe was so careful about the language used. We see when he's talking about the holy soul, he says, Sfiras Kedoshis, oh, expressions of godliness, holy things. And now when he's defining the exact same structure for the other soul, he says, Kisrin de Masabusa. These are crowns of impurity. Shehen Sheva Midas Rois. Why are they called impurity, crowns of impurity? Because the Tzar, actually, this is a language taken from the Zohar, because these are seven qualities, seven attributes, evil attributes. Habo is mearba yesed roi manal, that come from the four fundamentals, elements mentioned before, chapter one. Vesechel amolidam, and also the intellect, just as the holy soul has intellect and emotions, this unholy soul also has intellect and emotions. But pay attention, the Alter Rebbe said the other way around, emotions and intellect. When he was defining the holy soul, he says there's intellect and then there's emotions. And when he's defining the unholy soul, he says there's emotions and there's intellect. He didn't make a mistake. No. What's the main thing of the divine soul? Intellect. What's the main thing in the animal soul? Emotions. It's on purpose. And this intellect that this animal soul has, a nechelak, the shalosh, also divides in three parts, shen chokma, bina, vadas. These are also the same thing as we defined in chapter three, wisdom and understanding and knowledge, whatever that means. What that mean? They mean mokra midis. These are the source of the emotions. Ki amides en lefi erech haseichel, because it's like a known thing that the emotions are according to the level of the intellect. Because a child desires and loves small things of a low level, like candies and whatever, small things. Because his intellect is small and is short, so to speak, to grasp more expensive things, more valuable things. He can cry and drive you crazy for a candy. Come on, it's just a candy. Yeah, but the child is in that level. Yep, that's what it is. V'chein, in the same way, miskayes miskatzes midvarim ktanim, the child gets angry. Miskayes miskatzes is basically the same idea. for small things, Behenis Beispirus, and also the pride that a child has. It's a pride of small things. I know how to add 1 plus 1. Yeah, really? He's so proud. Okay, he's a child. What do you want from him? He's happy because he learned how to add 1 plus 1. The Shiar Midis, the same thing happens with the rest of the attributes, emotional attributes. And these 10 impure levels, when a person thinks about them, or medaber, or talks about them, or oyoise, or acts on them, הרי מחשבתי שבמויכו ודיבורי שבפיו, וכוי החמייסי שבידיו, ושיער לבעריו, it comes out, when he thinks about this, when he talks about this, when he actually does something, comes out that his thought in his mind, in his speech, in his mouth, and the power of action in his hands and the rest of the members of the body, נקראים לבוש שמסעבו, the same word he mentioned before, they are called unholy, impure garments. Just as in chapter 4, we spoke about pure garments of Torah, mitzvahs, and so on. Over here, it talks about impure garments of the opposite things. And these are garments, le'etzer b'chines eilu atmeyos, to these are garments to something else. To what? To these 10 impure levels mentioned before. Shemislabshes bahen, these 10 impure levels of the soul, the intellect and the emotions. Of the other side, soul, so to speak, animal soul, they get invested into these three unholy, impure garments. In the moment that a person is acting, doing something that is not supposed to be doing, or is talking about something he's not supposed to be talking, or is thinking about something he's not supposed to be thinking, but these garments basically serve whatever is inside of them. And basically, we're not talking about transgressions. This guy killed somebody. Oy vey, you killed somebody? Yeah. Okay, that's a terrible thing. And God doesn't like it. We're not talking about only those kinds of actions. Like Delta Rebbe says, Kol ha-maisim ha-shenasim tachas ha-shemesh. Translation, these are actually all the actions that happen under the sun. Everything, like people work and do things and whatever, you live your life like a normal person. All of these, if you don't do it in order to serve God, it's impure. I'm sorry. It's wrong. Asher akol hevel b'roitz ruach. All of these is actually empty. An evil spirit. And as it's written in the Zohar and Beshalach, go look at there. What does it say over there? Shen sevidu de rucha, chulei. These are like the brokenness of the spirit, etc. So the Zohar is saying, the Alter Rebbe is quoting the Zohar to actually prove his point, that what people do the whole day in regular life, it's actually ro'iz ruach, it's just emptiness and stupid things. We're not talking about aveides, transgressions. That, of course, is impure. No, even like normal and regular things. Don't think that when the Zohar says this is just actions and that's brokenness and so on. No. The same thing happens with the speech and with the thoughts that are not for God and for his will and for his service. Parentheses, El Trev is going to say this, but I want to mention it so nobody gets nervous, so to speak. When a person eats, so you need to eat, because God created us, that we need to eat. Not because I want to eat, I don't care about food, but God said that I have to eat. Why? Because if I don't eat, I die. I'm hungry, I want to eat something. It's a natural thing. So you can eat because you want to taste a very good food, or you can eat because you have to have strength, because God created you that way in order to serve God. The act itself is the same. It's just food. You chew and you swallow and so on. But the question is, what motivates you to eat? Why do you eat? Why do you eat? Do you eat because you want to fill your belly? You want to taste good food? Or you eat because you're serving God? Same thing happens when you sleep. God created me, I'm a regular human being. From time to time, I need to sleep. Otherwise, it doesn't function anymore. My brain doesn't function and so on. So when I sleep, why do you sleep? I'm not talking about myself. I'm saying in the best of the cases. When you sleep, why do you sleep? Because you're serving God. While you're sleeping, you're serving God. Because the reason, the motivation that leads you to sleep is not that just you're tired. It's because tomorrow you need to serve God in such and such way, whatever you do. So you need to sleep in order to be ready for tomorrow, and so on. So that's why Dal Terebe says, every action, we just read this, every action, every speech, every thought that is not for God and for His will and for His service, Shezeu pirush lashen sitra achra. This is what it means, the other side. This expression that I said, the other I was going to explain, he's explaining. That's what it means. That's what it means, the other side. What other side? There's only God. No. Wait a second. Pirush. I'll explain to you what the other side means. Sad acher she'einet sada kedusha. It's a side that is different and it's not holiness. Vetzada kedusha, and what does it mean holiness? Okay, wait a second. How do I distinguish what it means to be holy, a holy person, or an unholy person? How do you distinguish? I don't understand. You're talking about another side. What side? What's kedusha? So when you define what holiness means, you will automatically understand what it means, the other side. Very easy. Tzad kedusha, ein yela shira ve'amshacha mikedushas shel HaKadosh Baruch. Kedusha, holiness, there's only one thing in life that is holy, and it's just God. He's the only one. He's the source of holiness, and he's the only one that you can say he's holy. And we actually call him HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. He's the only one that is holy. So if, what does it mean, to translate, what does it mean holiness? Tzada Kedusha, it is just, in Ella, it's only where he's holiness, God's holiness, Shlakash Baruch Hu, holiness, resides and gets projected. Okay, so the Altareva is going like one step and another step, and I don't understand. First of all, he said, Sitra Achra, the other side. What does it mean, the other side? Oh, where it's not holy. Okay, what does it mean to be holy? It means where God is projected. How do you project God? I don't understand. I still don't understand what it means, holiness. And God only resides in something that is nullified to Him. Blessed be He. Both in a practical sense, like the supreme angels, they only do what God says and they're perfect and so on. They're battle, they're nullified to Him, to God. In a practical sense, in reality, bein bekoyach, or maybe in potential. What does it mean to be nullified to God in potential? Kechol ish Yisrael lamata, like any Jew down here, in this world. Shebekoyach li yisbatel mamesh legabi HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'mesidas nafsho al kedushas Hashem, that has the power, the capacity to be nullified, literally, toward God, giving his life for the holiness of his name and so on. Parentheses, non-Jews are not obligated to give their life for the sanctification of God's name, whatever that means. It's a mitzvah, in Parshas Kedoshim, Kedushim, Kedoshim Tiyu. I'm not going into those details. Al Terebe, as I mentioned in the previous classes, wrote for Jews. That's what he's talking about. But the point over here is, let's go back. What does it mean, Sitra Achra? So what's the other side? I want to understand. Okay, the other side, it means, in the definition that Alter Rebbe just gave over here, anything that is not battle, nullified to God. Because God is only revealed in anything that is battle to Him, nullified to Him. So anything that is not nullified to Him, so God doesn't reside over there, automatically that's Sitra Achra, that's another side. But something else. That doesn't mean that has independency from God. No way. There's nothing independent of God. As I mentioned before, there's nothing in the world that does not depend on God. Even the other side depends also on God. But raises itself, so to speak, to say, I don't care about you, I don't care about God. That's Tzitracha. That's the other side. That's automatically the other side. Velochen, Omru Rezad, that's why our sages said, Shafilu echad sheyoshev b'osek b'Torah, Shechina shruya v'chule. Our sages say in Pirkei Avos, the ethics of our fathers, even a person that is sitting alone and working, learning Torah, the divine presence resides over there, etc. And they also said, our sages also said, Kol bi'asara shechinta sharya. When you have 10 Jews, you have the divine presence. Le'oilam, in any situation, even when they're not learning Torah, even when they're not doing anything holy, you have 10 Jews, divine presence over there. Why? Because they have, the Jews, in potential, again, the potential to be nullified to God. So God says, okay, I go over there. Aval kol ma she'eino batel etzlo yisbarach, but anything else that is not nullified to God, blessed be He, ela hu davar nifrad bifnei atzmoy. Rather, it's something separated by itself, at least perceives itself separated from God. Doesn't mean that it's really separated. Eine mekabel chayus mikedushata shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mivichinas pnimius hakedusha, hu mahusa ve'atzmusa, v'chvoido ve'atzma. It's a long phrase. Anything that is not nullified to God, at least in potential, does not receive livelihood from His holiness of God, from the pnimius hakedusha, the most internal holiness of God, and the essence, and again, the essence and the glory in itself, and so on. So wait a second. You just said to me that everything depends on God. There's no such a thing as something independent from God. But that which is not nullified to God doesn't receive livelihood, whatever, from His pnimius hakedusha, the most internal holiness of God. So how is it alive? How does it exist? If God is not nurturing this thing, it should disappear automatically. So how does something else, quote unquote, sitra achra, something that can oppose God, how does that exist? Sotter explains. Ela mevichinas achoiroim. It receives a livelihood from the external, the back of God, so to speak. External aspects of God. What does that mean, internal and external? Very simple and very easy. Tough, but very simple and very easy. That which you really want, that's pnimius hakavana. That's the most internal intention of your life. Those steps that you have to give in order to reach what you really want, those are achorayim, the external things. Like, in very simple example, a person essentially, very deep inside, wants to live. If a person doesn't want to live, it's whatever, has to go to a psychiatrist and get help and so on. But let's take a normal person wants to live. I want to live. In order to live, I need to eat. Okay, I want food. In order to have food, I have to be able to buy it. So I need money. Oh, okay, I need money. So in order to have money, I need to work. I need a job. Okay, so I get a job. Do I really want to work? I don't care about work. I just need money. Do I really want money? No, I want food. Do I really want food? No, I want to live. Oh, okay. So the pnimius hakavana, pnimius internal means live, life. And all the rest is just external. I have to do it because otherwise I can't live. It's just an example. Sheyoredim, these external aspects, so to speak, of God, secondary, achoirai means the back, yoredim madrega le madrega, they come down level after level, revovois madregas, thousands of levels. In this chain of worlds defined also in chapter 2, that is going to be defined later also in the 40s, in a whole chain of cause and consequence with lots of contractions and concealments, to the point that the light, gets so diminished, miut achar miut, diminishing after diminishing, at sheyachol istzamtzem lizlav shechinas golus, to the point that this nurturing of God conceals itself and gets invested in exile. What does that mean? Toich oise davar anifrad, inside of this separated thing, that this thing that perceives itself separated, to give it life and to sustain it from nothing into something, in order that it should not go back to be nothing as it was before it was created. What did the Alter Rebbe say over here? The Alter Rebbe explained that God gives life to everything. Yeah, you're right. But to certain things, he gives life in a way that the thing can, up to a certain point at least, perceive that the life comes from God. To a certain point. And there are other things that God also gives life and sustains, but in a way, the way it comes down to this creature is in a way of concealment. To the point concealment that God is in exile within that thing. What does that mean to be in exile? Just like a person in exile, in prison, for instance, cannot express itself, cannot be productive to society and so on. In the same way, God's life inside this thing is completely concealed to the point that this thing does not perceive that it gets life from God. It gets nurtured from God. Not a way. No way. It's just perceived. I'm alive because of myself. Actually, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, he used to say, Li ye oiri vani asisini. The river Nile is mine, and I did myself. I'm here not because of God. I'm here because I made myself. I created myself. I'm God. I created myself. Now, is God giving life to this thing, this person, while he's saying this? Yes. Alter Rebbe is going to say it. Yes. But this thing perceives itself separated from God. That's called Sitra Achra. That's called the other side. Not that there's something else besides God. No. It's just God. Just one and just God. But this thing, God's life is so concealed inside of it that it feels itself separated from God.